Thanks for listening to this Arrow FM podcast, shared on accessmedia.nz with the support of New Zealand On Air.
Kia ora, everyone. Welcome. Good afternoon. Welcome to Aotearoa Pathways to Art with me, Becky Bateman. We are here again for episode 17, incredibly. We've been having 17 episodes and we've had some cracking guests, but I think possibly my favourite guest of all is today. With my lovely, lovely friend. I'm going to call you my friend now.
Yay!
Jackie Pearson. Jackie, you have got a fabulous new exhibition at Aotearoa.
Thank you.
And we're going to have a go at discussing it today. Now, the whole point of the show, if for new listeners, you haven't listened before, is that we talk to artists, we talk to community members, we talk to people who are thinking about art in our region, and we try and kind of demystify the exhibition for you. So there'll be lots of stories, there'll be lots of kind of little details that you might want to go and have a look at later when you go to the exhibition. So, as I said, Jackie, you're our guest today. Thank you so much for joining us.
Well, thank you for inviting me.
You are so welcome. And like most of my guests, I think we could probably talk for about 40 hours straight. And I think we might struggle just having an hour. So if I don't get through all these questions, I'll just be, you know, talking your ear off on the way home.
Yeah,
so,
yeah. That's good.
Yeah, okay. So, Jackie, would you like to introduce yourself and your new exhibition, the title, you know, how long it's on for, all that kind of stuff?
Oh, okay. Thank you, Becky. So it's lovely to be here. I was very honoured to be asked to do a solo exhibition at Aotearoa. It really focused my brain. And it's called Going with the Flow. And it's all watercolours, but I have painted those watercolours on a variety of surfaces. So if you are already a watercolourist or you've never painted, I'm hoping that it'll appeal to you from the point of view that I'm showing watercolours in a different light. And yeah, to sort of push some of the boundaries of what there are very large pieces, which for one pushes a boundary with watercolours. They're very, I'm told, they're very strong tonal watercolours, which is also quite different for watercolours as well. I'm hoping they're as powerful as an oil painting.
Yeah.
And watercolours does best of all is the flow, hence the title.
When you came up with that title, I was like, that's a great title. I absolutely get that for a watercolorist. And I think your exhibition is really interesting because, as you said, your watercolors aren't, well, I would say the normal watercolors if you say, oh, I'm a watercolor painter, but yours are just exquisite. They're so different to what I would, you know, beforehand think of what watercolours would be, like kind of very wishy-washy landscapes, you know, but yours are just so bright. And when you said it's like an oil painting, that's kind of apt, isn't it? Because that's what you started with. You started with oils.
I did, yes. I did win a Girl Guides competition with a watercolour when I was 12.
Well done.
National competition.
Wow.
Actually, that's not quite true. I came second, but that was quite good. So that was, my parents bought me some oil paints when I was a teenager. And so I did O level and A level art. It was always my favourite subject. Well, science as well, but art was something that I've always done from the age of two, of always drawing and sketching. It's just what I did. Always wanted a pencil in my hand, but I painted in oils right up until I was maybe about 30.
Okay.
And then I switched to watercolours.
So what happened? Why the sudden switch?
Well, there was a very strong reason why I switched to watercolours. Having done a little bit of watercolour, I was predominantly an oil painter, and I was being asked to do commissions and occasionally put an oil painting in my 20s in a show. But I had really severe eczema as a kid and as an adult, and I just looked like a cooked crayfish at the end of each commission that I did. And I just remember doing this painting of the Soren Larsen when I was about 30, and it was a commission from some people that had sailed on the Soren Larsen, and I was very proud of this painting, but I had the most awful eczema at the end of it. And I thought, I'm going to have a go at watercolours because I'm sure it's all the solvents.
Ah, and I was going to say, is it
the fumes?
Is it the fumes? Because yeah, oil painting is quite a...
I know quite a few oil painters that have problems. So I switched to watercolours and I haven't looked back. Now I don't have eczema because I got rid of it through diet, by the way. I'm thinking of just dabbling a little bit, and I've just recently bought myself some water-based oils, which sounds like a bit of an oxymoron, but it's actually but they're emulsified, and you can actually mix them with a little bit of safflower oil, and they become buttery like ordinary oils. But of course, they're water mixable, and you know, and washable, you know, brushes, so you don't have to deal with anything nasty. So I am going to give that a whirl, but my heart is with watercolour now. I love watercolours,
and it shows through your beautiful painting. It really does. It really does. It's so interesting hearing you say that you were quite artistic from a really early age, because that's something that I've really noticed talking to lots of artists over the last year and a bit, is that nearly all of them have said, I was always drawing, I always had a pen in my hand, I was no good at this, but I loved doing drawing. When Jane Sinclair was in here a couple of months ago, and she brought in a picture she'd done, which I was very suspicious of, that she could do that when she was three, you know, she was always saying, I was just always had a pen in my hand, I was always doodling, I was always drawing. And so interesting that you say the same thing.
Yes. I mean, my mum said at the age of two I was drawing. And I think that, though, that you can learn to paint later on in life. I do a lot of teaching, and of adults mainly. And I've taken on students that have been 80. And in a couple of years, with the right, you know, sort of direction, they're doing fabulous paintings, because actually I think some people have left things on the back burner for a family career and so on. So it's a great joy to me to get people to pick up their pieces. But I think if you're going to be really dedicated, and I was, because although, you see, I had a science career in soils, I still carried on drawing and painting, but I was mainly drawing during those years. But I think it's just in my blood. I just have to paint. I feel happy when I do.
Are your parents? Was there anyone else in your family that's particularly artistic?
We don't know anybody on either side of the family. That having said that, though, there must be because my mother has, she's given them to me, a couple of sketches she did when she was at school, and they were really good.
Interesting.
So she did have the ability. She just didn't have the desire. And actually, Becky, that's what I say to people. People often say, "Oh, you know, you have a gift." Well, actually, I don't. I have the desire to do it.
And the practice.
Because that automatically makes you want to practice. And it's the brush miles and the pencil miles that actually turn you into, because it takes years and hours and hours of thinking and pure concentration. So, for instance, when I've got a painting to do, I'll wake up in the morning, I'll have it all sorted, and I will literally paint it in my head from start to finish before I get up.
Goodness.
And I'll say to my husband, I've just finished painting it, I'm going to have a quick breakfast and I'm off and I'm going to just do it.
So you're kind of thinking about layers, is that what you mean? You're like, and I'm going to do this layer next, and that's how it's going to look, and kind of visually
I'll visually have the brush in my hand. Amazing. And I'll be dunking the brush in, you know, the right size brush in the water, picking up the right amount of water, sloshing it on, and getting that feeling of running, and then at what stage will I dry this part of the painting, or have it wet and move on to some darker areas. So I'll visualize the whole thing, and then I know that makes me perform better when I do that.
It's almost like a dry run, isn't it?
Yeah, that's it.
That's
and
fantastic.
I do a draft as well, but I don't do that visualising for the draft stage. I'll just kick into it, get it out, because I'm so visual. I'm useless in meetings. People can be talking and talking, and I won't have a clue what to say. But if I can rough something out and visually see it, then I can do it,
yeah.
But I can't do things. I can't sort of think on my feet, really. I have to really strongly visualize things.
How interesting. And it's so fascinating to hear your process.
Yeah.
So how long would, say, an average commission take you? Would it be weeks or months or hours?
It's not a straightforward question. Because if I take the show, for instance, the railway station.
I'll tell you what, I'll put that up on the screen and we can talk about that at the same time. You carry on and I'll find...
Okay, well, the railway station took me months. It has sold now, which is fantastic. Yes. I'm very happy it's going to a happy home. But that took me a very long time because it's prepared surface that the paint is added and then sort of teased and lifted off in minute areas, and it's layered and layered and layered, and then I flicked to, you know, push the figures back and lifted again for getting that glow. It took a long time. So that's months. And then going to, say, one of the smaller, say, the Wave, with a girl flying around the wave, it's a small piece. And then I'll come to your question. Sorry, I'm being a bit long.
No, go for it.
Coming to the average size. So the small one, I could, as long as I've done a draft and I've done the thinking process, I've worked it all out, because I never just copy a photograph. I never do that. Yeah. Everything gets completely changed. And they're always my own photographs. I'm absolutely rigid about that, because I think that's the composition in the first place.
Yeah.
That's you, and you've composed it. Because as an artist, you have to be... I'll come back to what we're saying in a minute.
Feel free.
As an artist, you have to be a composer and a technician. And you have to be a bit of a scientist as well, because of the materials and how they work. So anyway, that little painting, having done all that side of it, and I start the actual one that's framed, I probably would have done that in about 2.5 hours.
Wow, okay.
It's
almost like the tip of an iceberg. That's the bit you see, is it, the finished painting. But then you have all this
There's a lot behind it, yes.
And the prep and
yeah. 2.5 hours probably doesn't count the... Just every day I might go, oh, that needs just a little bit of a tone. So I'm not counting that side of it. So there might be a, before it's framed, a few weeks of just nibbling, tweaking. I call it. Yeah, tweaking.
The funny thing, Jackie, I'm sure people won't mind you saying this, but even when the pictures were going up in the exhibition, you're like, oh, can I just take that one off and fit? Jackie, no, you can't.
No, you banned me, didn't you?
Yes, I was like, no, you cannot start fiddling. She's like, I could just see that kind of, but if I could just do... Do you think you'd ever kind of finish a painting? Or is that always something you go, I could just fiddle with that picture set?
No, Ruth at Silk and Wood did all my framing, and she's just wonderful. She, I sometimes have a deadline, you see, and I've got to give her time.
Yes.
Can't spring things on her. So, I just have to draw a line somewhere. But if I don't know how I'm going to improve a painting, that's where I stop. And if I think, well, I could do this and that, but if it's not going to considerably add to the painting, it's better to leave it fresh, because you can do one brush mark too many. You really can.
Yes.
You can ruin.
Yes.
And I've bitter experience. I've done it many a time. So yes. Yeah, there's a
there's a fine line.
Yeah, there's a line that you mustn't cross.
Well, I love this one. I love that you've kind of got that wintry, wet evening commute kind of perfect. I could just visualize myself being in there, getting the umbrella out, going, I just want to get home. But I just love these buildings, and I love kind of the architecture. You've just got it spot on, and that kind of light drawing you in to kind of the train station.
Yes, I really love the railway station. It's always different weather. It's got either beautiful shadows or beautiful light. Thing is, I think a lot of artists miss an opportunity with strong light, and portraits in particular. But if it's raining, you get a different quality of light. Mm. And this is where on a dull day, you would go for colour, yeah. say autumn colours, for instance, or, mechanical lights, man-made aspects. And I've painted Wellington many times in the rain, and walking around, if you sort of walk when it's raining hard with some expensive camera dangling around your neck, and you look deep into the reflections and you can see the old bank and all the lovely reflections deep in there, and I really get really lost in my thoughts. I once was taking photographs on Lambton Quay, and this guy came racing up to me. It was in the days when everybody was switching over to digital cameras, and he came, and I didn't have a digital camera at this stage. I was probably the last person on the planet to take my film into Eastbourne Pharmacy. Anyway, he came racing over Lambton Quay and going, "Oh, no," he was going, "No," and he thought I got a digital camera. He said, "You'll ruin it." And then he saw that it wasn't. I said, "Oh, no, don't worry. It's not a newfangled digital camera." And so I didn't realise. It was good that he did that, though, because I didn't realise. But it's nice, isn't it, when people worry about you?
It is. And I know exactly what you mean about the rain, because actually that's how I knew of you to start with, kind of your beautiful kind of Wellington in the rain, kind of cars and the old bank and that kind of thing. And I think you're right. I think there's something so unique about what you do, is that you're not shy about rain or cloudy days, where a lot of people only ever go, "It's sunny, it's a beautiful day, I'll do Wellington." But I love that almost that you're going, well, a lot of the times Wellington isn't like that, and actually it's quite beautiful in the rain as well.
Yes, and you can see beauty in anything, really, pretty much anything.
Yes.
Yeah.
So I love this one, and I'm so pleased it's sold, Jackie. Yes, it's sold at the weekend.
That's very nice. Yes.
Which is really fantastic. So I'm pleased it's going to a good home, because I think it's going to look fabulous on someone's wall. So
it was blood, sweat and tears.
I can imagine.
To the framer.
Would you do a different one at the railway station? Would you repeat this one?
No, never. I would repeat the subject, but I would never repeat a painting. It'd be quite different.
Yes.
Something I've just remembered that I didn't mention in my talk is that I used another technique at the bottom of the painting, where there's the blue on the pavement, and I actually atomized pure French ultramarine in ground powder.
Okay.
So I launched pure powder at that.
Wow.
With I had a little there's little blowers, and
yes,
blew it around. There's quite a lot of techniques in that.
It's a really, you can tell it's quite a technically tricky painting. Beautiful. Is there anything else you want to talk about this painting? Is there anything?
No.
Is there another particular painting you'd like to talk about? Do you have a favourite, Jackie? What's your favourite one?
Well, it's hard to say, because they're at the moment they're all my children, you see, yes. So I haven't really, no. But I suppose the big ones were the hard, the hard work. So that one that we've just been talking about, but the Rangitiki.
Oh, yes. I've got a picture of that one as well. Let's pop that one up for people.
And that's a landscape.
There we go.
So that one's got that's been painted on some lovely paper that it's called Khadi paper. It's 100% recycled cotton clothing, made in India, and Gandhi set it up in the and by the way, the paper's the same with the railway station as well, and it was set up, I think Bangalore is where they make it, and it was for the port. Gandhi set it up in the 40s to help have an industry for poor people, but also watercolours are a big deal in India. So this one, unlike the railway station, is painted directly onto the cotton cloth with a little bit of gesso and gold leaf, 24 karat gold leaf in the hills.
Hang on, what's gesso? What is gesso?
Okay, it's what mainly what oil painters prepare their cotton canvas with.
So it's kind of like a base layer?
So it is, and okay. I'm using, I because I'm an oil painter, I thought, why not? And let's see if watercolour will go on it. And it does, it gives an interesting texture. So it's something that I've developed myself, except that I did go and do a workshop and an exhibition in Western, in Calcutta, about 15 years ago. I was invited by a couple of well-known artists over there, and the government here invited them over to paint the Indian community for a Diwali okay. exhibition at you know, the exhibition hall in you know, Queen's Wharf, and they then invited me in return, because I was asked to look after them, and then I made friends with them, and they invited me over, and I did an exhibition and a workshop over there, and they took me to a university called Shantiniketan University in Western Bengal, and it's largely an outdoor arena where there's lots of different groups doing all sorts of art, you know, it's a clay modeling and painting and so on. And I picked up this idea of painting on a kind of a clay surface,
okay.
which they made in a big pot and then layered it on their canvas. And they were mixing acrylic paint with their watercolour. So it opened my eyes that there was all sorts of experimentation that could be done.
And the scientist in you.
So I started doing some experiments, bits and pieces.
Yeah.
And it's just grown a little bit in that way. So I've now started to do a sort of a partial preparation of my watercolour paper with a little bit of this gesso. I do mix it with some other compounds as well, like watercolour ground and okay. some other bits and pieces, but largely that's what it is. It adheres really well to the, because it's all cotton, so that's what it's made for, to adhere to that. And then it makes the watercolour slippy. It kind of,
okay.
you have to move it, but it slides off with your brush. But on the pure cotton paper, that's where you get more of a flow. So it kind of slides on the gesso and it flows on the paper. So you get a, so this one is a combo of the two things. So when I'm painting with watercolour, I use a hell of a lot of water with the pigment. So it's like, whoa, it's flowing and careering around the paper, and I'm moving the board. And this was a 1.2-metre painting.
Oh, my
so
goodness.
It was, you know, it was very hard to handle and get right. And then the other distinction of this painting is that there's probably about 7 or 8 layers on this, wet on dry layer. So I've dried
right.
it.
Yep.
Then I've got a very big, like you get these Japanese hake brushes, H-A-K-E, quite commonly sold in art shops, and they're absolutely great for doing this layering. They're made of goat hair, and it creates the most fine flow, and you have to be very, very gentle with each layer, because you literally can't disturb the each layer. So you have to know what you're doing, because if you do,
yes.
the layer becomes like sludgy. And if you look at the fields there, if that had happened, well, I might have had to start again. Yeah.
Goodness.
It's very, I think watercolour is, I mean, I tease my students that it's for people that like life in the fast lane, and they like a bit of excitement in their life. It can be a bit scary.
Yes.
But it's very, very rewarding when, once you get to know its sort of little personality.
Well, amazingly, Jackie, we're already halfway through our interview, so we better have some music,
right.
Because otherwise we're going to run out of time to actually
yes.
oh, whoops time to actually listen to anything that I told you would be here for hours. Yes. We could quite happily. Would you like to introduce your first piece of music? Which one would you like to have first? Would you like Nancy or Elton?
We'll have Nancy, shall we?
Let's have Nancy.
So Nancy Griffiths is, there's a Bette Midler rendition of this song, From a Distance. And I'm a bit of an idealist. I really do think that there's hope for the world. I do. And it's in a muddle at the moment, and it's terribly sad, the news. It breaks everybody's hearts. It literally makes me cry, and it's awful. But there is hope. Humankind has survived so many things. But we know so much now. We've got to work with other species. Mm. We've got to work with the planet. That we don't need to have wars. We don't need to have horrible things happening. And this song, what's her name? Carol Gold, who wrote the song. She'd been to a nuclear protest meeting, and she realised that, you know, if we all took a step back from our home and work troubles and our bigger, you know, political geopolitics, and we just stood back, the world is actually savable. There is lots of hope, but we've all got to do our bit and never give up. Yeah. And I think the words are fantastic in this. So there you go.
Fabulous explanation there, Jackie, and I totally agree with you 100%. So every little bit helps, doesn't it? So hopefully this song will kind of career people into doing their little bit as well today. All right, this is Nancy Griffith, From a Distance.
From a distance, the world looks blue and green, and the snow-capped mountains white. And from a distance, the ocean meets the stream, and the eagle takes to flight. The voice of hope, it's the voice of peace, it's the voice of every man. From a distance, we all have enough, and no one is. God is watching us, God is watching us, God is watching us from a distance. Even though we are at war, from a distance I can't comprehend what all this. It's the love of us. It's the heart of every man. It is the hope of us. It's the love of us. This is the song of every man.
Isn't she lovely? Thank you. That was so... Well, let me just pause that, otherwise we're still playing. That was such a beautiful song. And you're right, it does kind of make you feel the world isn't all too horrific.
Yes.
There's some hope there.
And I think that's why I paint what I do. I want to capture what's beautiful in the world because, you know, we need that to be survivors.
Absolutely. Yeah. So we've talked about Rangitiki, we've talked about the train station. Shall we talk about your lighthouses?
Yes.
And your connection to lighthouses? Because this is a fabulous story as well. Like, I was just saying when the music was on that everybody's got a story, haven't they, Jackie?
Yes.
Everyone's got a story of how they've gone somewhere or there's a pivotal moment. And I feel like your lighthouses, they're a pivotal moment in your kind of art story.
Oh, absolutely. And also in us staying in New Zealand, because when we were young things, we were invited to come over, you know, in our 20s, come over in the to do a stint with the... Tony was with the Royal Navy, and we did a stint with the New Zealand Navy, he did. And I was practising soil science then. And we came over... and then we had the opportunity of staying anyway, but Tony had a job, a good job in Glasgow Dockyard, and to either go back to the Navy there or go to Glasgow. And we'd been living in Scotland and love Scotland, but we were kind of falling in love with New Zealand.
Yes.
And then he was asked to stay and take over the lighthouse maintenance service. And at the time they were being SOE'd, and so we had a massive decision to make, and we did. We stayed, and for several years we looked after, well, we, Tony, and he had a team up and down the country, and he had all of New Zealand's lighthouse
wow.
to maintain, which was the best, most awesome job.
And
we met some wonderful people in the business and keepers. The keepers gave me an albatross badge, which meant that I'm in the Lighthouse Keepers Association as an honorary member. So, but what I did was I used to go and help Tony, you know, clean them, and he might be changing bulbs and doing the maintenance. And I thought, I really should be painting these guys. And so I started to research their history.
Yeah.
And went to archives, got a lot of help from Maritime New Zealand. They were awesome. And I had this idea that I wanted to do... because I've always been a history buff, and I thought these are the castles of New Zealand, and some of them were being replaced and falling into disrepair, and it seemed tragic. And every single lighthouse in New Zealand has its own characteristics in terms of the physical building, except for Baring Head and Cape Reinga,
okay.
which are the same. Exactly the same pattern.
But they've all got different patterns.
But every single other one.
Seriously?
Yep.
Because you just assume red, white, and you just assume that's a lighthouse.
Yes.
How interesting.
Oh, that's right. And then there was, is it John or Robert Balfour? Anyway, his surname's Balfour. And he was the nephew of Robert Louis Stevenson. And he was,
oh my goodness.
He was brought over in the 1800s to be the... lighthouse builder. There was a lot of shipwrecks happening in those days,
yeah.
and he's buried in Dunedin cemetery, and he built most of the lighthouses in that big era between 1860 and 1880. There was a big lighthouse building era, and they were all done from either local timbers or stone. Dog Island, for instance, in off Bluff, was built by convicts from local stone, and it's because the island's very flat, it's a very tall lighthouse. I forget how high it is. You know, that our local one, Cape Palliser, which incidentally our children for years and years thought we were going to see Kate Palliser. They told me years later that they wondered why we never saw Kate Palliser.
Who's this Kate Palliser? That's the story. Yeah, so. I can imagine a child doing, you're making that kind of.
But many a time we used to lug these bags of tools up those 150 steps, vertical steps. And we had helicopter rides and boat. We had a boat and we called it Light Refreshment.
I love that.
My darling father came up with that name.
That's a fantastic name.
We had four team of four-wheel drives with electrical maintenance team. So it occurred to me that I'm going to paint these so I sketched and painted, and then I put together what I thought were the main lighthouses, as they called them in the old days, the White Ladies. Those were the Balfour lights, the White Ladies, and there were 36 really special lighthouses. And there's three types of lights. There's landfall lights, like Castle Point is a landfall light, where the first sighting of New Zealand from the ocean. Then there's a coastal light, so Pencarrow is a coastal light as you came around. Then you get all the harbour lights, so you get three types of lights.
I'm learning so much from you today, Jackie.
And of course Cape Palliser is a landfall light. I put her on at the museum City and Sea. They were wonderful to me, and they gave me their a fantastic space to put my 36 paintings. I researched their history. I put them all together with their so there was a potted history next to each painting, and then it was attended by so many lighthouse keepers, and they all sold.
Fantastic.
And, absolutely lovely, and it was on for quite a while, this show. And then I put them together, so I thought, what am I going to do with 36 paintings? So I thought, I could divide them up into... No, I beg your pardon, it was 39.
Ah.
Because I divided it up into three 13-month calendars. So each calendar had another January, so that when you get to December...
Clever!
Yes,
because that's always the annoying thing.
You don't have to have two calendars hanging there.
Very clever.
It worked out very well.
That is, isn't it? Gosh.
And I put them together as a calendar. So really, the painting in the show is...
Oh, yes, let's pop that up for everyone so they can have a look.
Is a kind of they're the two Wairarapa lighthouses, Castle Point and Palliser. And I thought, if I'm going to do a triptych, I really love that rock.
Yes, good old white rock.
And so I called it Sentinels of Wairarapa.
It's beautiful. And again, your beautiful reflections that you're so good at. I've actually only visited, I haven't visited White Rock.
Mm.
I've never been. It's always been one of those places I must go to, because so many people say, oh, it's amazing, it's fantastic. But I've never quite got there.
Yeah.
Not yet, anyway. But I have seen the other two, and they're very imposing. But now I'm going to have a look at their stripes. I'm going to go and have a look at all the lighthouses, I think, now. Fantastic.
Yes, and Castle Point was the first light to be made rather than overseas. The glass is Fresnel glass made in Paris, but most of the iron lighthouses, like Palliser, for instance, was made in Glasgow. Mm-hmm. And, I think Castle Point is 1912. Okay. I've gone rusty on their history a little bit now, but I used to know the... I'm supposed to be writing a book now and expanding, because I for the calendar and the exhibition, I could only put a small amount, but I've researched larger amounts, so that's what I'm going to do probably next year.
Goodness. Would you go... Do you think they've changed that much that you would do a whole new set, or do you think they've...
Yeah, my painting start, because that was painting back in 2000. So the calendars were 2000, 2001 and 2003. So my painting style has changed considerably. So I would like to go and revisit them. So but I don't want to waste the research that I've done, you see, so I'm going to do something about that.
Excellent. I think a book would be fabulous. As we've only got 15, 20 minutes left, should we have our second song?
Yes.
Do you want to explain why you've chosen the awesome... My family are going for a bit of an Elton John stage at the moment. I'm still standing on nearly on every single day.
Okay.
my youngest loves it. Oh. But why have you chosen Roy Rogers?
Well, I've always loved the up-tempo beat of this. And I thought it was appropriate for my talk with you, because I think as a painter, and I presume novelists do this as well, you're living in your head and your imagination. And so every day I'm just living in my little world.
Daydreaming away.
That's what the words are all about, you know, whatever's going on, you know, this and that, and it all gets on top of you. There's still Trigger and Roy Roy Rogers.
All right, well, let's put this on then. And Jackie, just don't do too much daydreaming. We're back in, what, 4 minutes?
Okay.
Sometimes you dream, sometimes it seems there's nothing there at all. You just seem older than yesterday, and you're waiting for tomorrow to call. You draw to the curtains, and one thing's for certain. I'd liven the pace if I could. Oh, I'd rather have a ham and my sandwich and cheese, but complaining wouldn't do any good. Lay back in my armchair, close eyes and think clear. Turning to our silver screen.
Jackie, that was beautiful. I love that. As I said, I'm an Elton John fan. And I've not heard that for a very long time. So
makes
I really
you feel good.
It does make you feel good. I might put that on a bit of a constant in our house, especially with my youngest being in an Elton stage of his life.
Oh, right.
I was going to say, talk about Elton John. That doesn't really make any sense. Your newest work, Jackie, because you've kind of, in this show, it's been really interesting to see what you've brought in for the show. Because you've got those classic landscapes, you've got your classic water and your reflections, which you're obviously a master at. But you're having a go at a few different things. Your portraits, Jackie, because I haven't seen those before in your work. Do you want to tell us about why you've started doing portraits and where you're hoping to kind of go with it?
Okay, so I have to say, when I was a teenager, I used to draw, not paint, but I used to draw faces. I was always drawing heads. And then I didn't for a very long time. And just recently, probably the last couple of years, I've started to paint the occasional head. And if I see somebody who looks interesting, I might accost them and say, any
chance? Can I paint your head?
Yeah, and everyone's always been very nice. I was in Australia. I go and teach over in Australia once a year, and I was in a cafe with my students. We were having a sketch breakfast before class in
the fabulous
middle of nowhere, where it's all very you know, very rural. And this guy comes in with his hat with badges on it, big sort of cowboy type hat, and I said, oh, I've got to go and ask him if I can go and paint, he posed for me.
Yeah.
And he was very happy, and so I think possibly that was a bit of a breakthrough portrait for me. And and then since then, I actually put that in the International Watercolour Masters for consideration, and I was shortlisted there were 200 of us that were shortlisted, but it was out of 3,000
my goodness
international entries. And I've got this portrait currently being it's gone now, but in May they had their big conference in Lilliesham Hall in Shropshire recently, where everybody comes from all over the world who's a watercolour aficionado, and they projected it as part of that. So they told me all about that, so that's really nice. So I suppose my aim with portraits is to, I'd like to become what they would consider an international master, but there's a panel and you have to submit so many portraits. So I'm aiming for that at the moment. But I've just had a portrait, Marcus. He's a boatie when I was up Matakana way last year. And I just saw him on his boat and asked him to pose, and he did. And I've just won the Curator's Award at the Academy of Fine Arts with that portrait.
You're so modest, Jackie. I've just won this picture. Oh, well, it was quite nice.
I am mentioning that I won a prize, so it's not that modest.
Well, anyway, done.
But that's, so that was really a nice thing. So I decided for this show to put a couple of portraits that I had been dying to paint, but was a little bit, do I have it in me? And they're big portraits, big full, they're sort of a metre high. Mm. And one is of Dennis, who was sir. The...
Let's pop Dennis on the screen.
So Dennis had the shoe mending business on the corner of Church Street in... Yep. Masterton, and he posed for me at work, so that was really good. So I've done that, and I've done a portrait for him of that, and same with Marcus. So Marcus will get a portrait. So I always, if somebody poses for me, I always give them a portrait as a thank you. And then the other one is a potter.
Oh yes, I've got one.
And
of those
that
as well.
One is so in other words, what I'm doing is portraits of doing, think an action
of skills. Yeah.
Yes, and I'd love to do an exhibition of people, sort of artisans. That's the way I'm thinking. And I was down in Hokitika last year and got behind the scenes, having told them what I wanted to do. And they, the glass blowers, let me go and photograph them at work with all the smoke
Yeah, so I've got That'd be fabulous.
Oh, I've got some lovely, exciting shots. So I'm gathering, and I just want to think of artisans at work and how I can portray them. So I like getting, you know, I mean, this potter actually was probably technically one of the hardest of them because it was very spontaneous. The lower part from his hand downwards, it actually all happened in one fell swoop. And it was largely wet on wet. And in other words, it was all dripping and very wet while I completed the whole thing. And technically, it was really difficult. I had a series of photographs to work from, but I completely made up the bottom part of it. From a bit of information and sort of the colours. And when I think of how I painted that, I kind of don't know how I did it, you know, because it happened. And it was a bit scary because I got his head and body how I wanted it, but I had to get the rest of it all working. So technically that wasn't a safe painting for me. And I was that pleased when I finished it and it was how I really envisaged it.
Yeah.
And by the way, that's another thing. I have an idea of what I want, but I give myself loads of wiggle room and I don't really know what a painting's going to look like until it's finished.
That's interesting. Jackie, I've just said at the top, we've got 5 minutes left, Jackie. We've got so much to talk about still. Jackie, is your exhibition, is it in a particular order, and what do you want people to take away from this exhibition to kind of finish off?
Okay, well, so I brought all my paintings in. They'd all been done individually, and I hadn't ever thought of them as a collection, except that I was keeping a range of different styles, different types of watercolours, and keeping my strongest paintings together for this exhibition. But when I brought it in, there was yourself and Sarah, the director, and you came up with the idea, because for me, I don't know, I would have just put them here and there. And you saw the railway station, you thought, I've got a good idea, you said. How about you get on the train, you come over to the Wairarapa, there's the sea, the waves,
Lake Wairarapa, yes.
There's the lighthouses and White Rock, and then you kind of have a meander coming through. And I'd never have thought about that in a million years. It was very creative.
That's the fun bit about exhibitions. Everyone just brings in these works, you're like, well, I don't know what to do, but it just suddenly struck me that it did kind of feel like a weekend away. You're leaving rainy Wellington and you're heading over the hill, you see the lake and then, you know, you almost kind of go on a bit of a wander through the seaside.
And I think you created what you said with a narrative purely by you just having a fresh look at those paintings in a totally different way, and it just shows different people see totally different things. So I was very impressed because that really did work very well.
I think so. I think having that beautiful Rangitiki one right there.
And then we went further up north and there's Rangitiki.
And it's just that light that on those hills, that 24 karat gold just sparkles, doesn't it, right at the back? I think that's fabulous. But do you think there's a lot of misconceptions about watercolour that people will come to the show and go, oh, that's not what I was expecting?
Yes, well, I think people do think of watercolours as being a bit, you know, pale. And I think traditionally galleries don't hold many watercolours. I think it's very sad and disappointing that they don't, because, you know, watercolours can stand up to oil paintings in terms of strength and character and so on. But I think people think that they might fade. Well, that's a complete misrepresentation of them. They should last as long as an oil painting, if not longer. If you think back to the Neanderthal and the caveman days, that is what they were using. They were mixing raw sienna with water and spitting it between their fingers and making handprints and making bison and charging mammoths and whatever, and right up. But I think traditionally it's been used as a sketch, because oil would be expensive and you mix the pigments with a bit of water and do some sketches. But there were certain artists like John Singer Sargent Turner, and have really made watercolors masterpieces in their own right. I think you know, they can stand at New Zealand light. I think possibly in the olden days they were quite commonly using madders, and madders do fade, but professional painters these days wouldn't use madders, which are like rose petal ground. I have a tube to sniff, and I just have it in my classes to, as a joke, really. I say it's got the most beautiful rose smell, though, but I wouldn't put it on my painting. But you know, ultramarine and all the main colours, they don't, they'll stand the test of time, as will the paper, because it's 100% cotton, and 100% cotton is archival. So I mean, sometimes people don't like the glass because of the glare, but if you put a painting away from a window, you know, not right opposite a window, it's absolutely fine. And you can get non-reflecting glass at the end of the day, and then that's fine as well.
Oh, Jackie, it's been so lovely talking to you. I think, as I said at the very beginning, I think I could talk to you pretty much all day, and I can't believe an hour has already disappeared. It's been so lovely to have you on the show. Thank you for coming. Thank you for saying yes to me when I said, please come on my show.
Thank you, Becky. I've really enjoyed the last hour. Thank you.
Good. And your show is on to the 18th of August, so plenty of time for people to come and have a look.
Yes, so please come and have a look.
And they're for sale. And they're for sale, so you can have your own unique Jackie Pearson that will last generations.
That's right.
Thank you so much, everyone, for listening. We will be back. This will be repeated on the second Tuesday, so next week. But apart from that, we'll be back on the... Gosh, it's August next time. It's July. Oh my goodness me. We'll be back on the 6th of August for the next instalment for episode 18. So do listen out for that. We'll be putting up on Facebook and our social media stories and things about who's coming in and what we're going to be talking about. So please do keep an eye out. If you do want to download this, you can go to the Arrow FM website and you can download the whole thing, or you can go to the YTV and on YouTube and listen that way. So thank you again, everyone, for listening. Thank you again, Jackie, and see you next month. Bye, everyone.